It is my pleasure to introduce to you Rebecca Kiesling, founder and president of Save the One. Rebecca is an international pro-life and adoption speaker and is the national spokeswoman for the National Personhood Alliance. Rebecca is an attorney, wife, and mother of five. Her topic, if all human life begins at conception, why the compromises?
I learned that I was conceived in rape when I was 18. I felt totally alone. And it was years before I finally met somebody else, and I spoke at his church and he introduced me as his sister. Different rapist, same father in heaven. And it was so great to be able to laugh like that.
Every year in the United States, over 25,000 women become pregnant through rape. One third of these women choose to keep and raise their children, while still others choose adoption. Save the One protects, supports, and empowers such mothers and such children.
And I remember standing here in the kitchen. I just found out that I had been the product of rape.
My mom told me that she wanted to sit down and talk to me. She was trembling and was crying. She began to tell me that I was conceived in rape.
Our culture tends to talk about life conceived in rape as a disgrace, a painful reminder, the rapist child. Our laws are less likely to protect a child conceived in rape, and often, so are we.
And I spent so much of my time trying to hide that part of my life, and now I realize that there's nothing to be ashamed about. I don't deserve death. My children deserve to be alive. I deserve to be alive.
We are more than overcomers, and my mom and I have become our greatest advocates and supporters of each other. And I share it for the women who are like my mom. Just because we were conceived in rape, it doesn't mean that there is nothing beautiful in us and from us that can't be offered.
If you're facing the pain of rape or of an abortion, if you're a mother or a child by rape or incest, you are not alone.
There's strength in numbers, and it is a huge witness when they can see a whole group of us.
Save the One.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for our one and only Save the One, Rebecca Kiesling.
Very glad to be here. Now, today I'm actually going to be talking about strategy instead of just merely sharing my story, but my story will get weaved in through this discussion on strategy. The name of our organization, Save the One, came from two places. First of all, there's a motto within the pro-life movement that you save the 99 in exchange for the one. The burning building analogy. Wouldn't you save as many as you can while working to save all? Well, first of all, I don't see that they're working to save all. What I see is that they shut the water off, send the fire trucks home, and they stand there watching the building burn down with the one inside of it. We've had the Hyde Amendment in place with the rape exceptions for more than, I think, 24 years now. Didn't always have a rape exception, but nobody has ever gone back to save the one. As they say, working to save all. It's not happening. I'm from Michigan, where we've never had a rape exception because they save them all. They don't follow this model of compromise, sacrificing the one. And whenever I hear the 99 for the one, I can't help but think of the parable of the lost sheep. Because Jesus was all about saving the one. And I've had some people disagree with me and try to say, oh, but in the parable of the lost sheep, the 99 were already safe. Okay, well, he still made the one a priority, and Jesus kept talking about the least of these. I mean, who are the least? Who are the least of the least? Are they not the children conceived in rape? Or children who have special needs, parents given a challenging prenatal diagnosis, the so-called hard cases in the abortion debate. How would you like to be called a hard case? I resent that. We resent that. But if you knew us, you would know that we're easy to love. And then in the parable of the lost sheep, Jesus, a lot of people think, oh, the lost sheep, Jesus talking about, you know, the lost souls, adults and children, everybody who don't know Christ, right? Not actually. In the parable of the lost sheep, it starts out, and many people, they sort of bifurcate this and this verse, and they don't realize in context what Jesus was really talking about. He starts out saying, see that you do not despise any of these little ones. He was talking about little ones. And despise. Wow, those are some really strong words. I mean, who would despise a little one? Well, in today's society, I submit to you that there is no segment of the population who is more despised than the child conceived in rape. We get called demon seed, evil seed, monster's child, horrible reminder of the rape. Sean Hannity, 2 years ago, interviewing my friend Lila Rose, it's on his website, you can listen to the conversation. He said to her, he knows he's not consistent on it. He says, but I just think that's an evil seed. And then to make it clear what he's saying, he says, doesn't the Bible say that the sins of the father will be passed on to the child for the third and fourth generation or something like that? Okay, what the Bible actually says is that you're not to punish the child for the sins of the father, that each shall be punished for his own sin. And then about a year and a half ago at a pastor's conference of a couple thousand, a pastor, Bishop Paul Morton Jr., he was saying that he was rejecting the Democratic Party over the issue of abortion, but then he said, but the Republicans take it too far. He said, you mean to tell me a woman's pregnant with an demon seed? And then he said, again, a demon seed, not what God created? That's a pastor saying it at a pastor's conference, not what God created. Like, there's something wrong with your theology. Like, where in the Bible does it suggest that Satan creates children? Really? I mean, you really believe that, like, Satan created me? Wow. So we have a long way to go, and I'm telling you, we are despised. And then also, I believe that children with special needs are despised. You know, they're accused of taking up precious medical dollars and things like that. I mean, you don't find politicians saying that they're pro-life, except in cases of rape and fatal abnormalities. They don't say that on their websites or when they're campaigning, but the fact is that almost all of the late-term abortion bans passed down south had rape. I mean, they didn't have rape exceptions, but they had fatal abnormalities. Hello, why do you think most people are having late-term abortions? It's because they're being given that kind of diagnosis and they're being pressured by doctors to abort. And so you completely undermined everything you just did. That just happened in South Carolina this week, where they were able to, my hero, Senator Lee Bright, filibustered last year on this issue. And so I flew out there, did a press conference with him and other members of the Save the One, completely changed the dialogue. He was getting attacked nationally for being such an extremist. It was the first time I'd ever heard of a politician filibustering to protect the child conceived in rape. I talked to him on the phone, and he told me how it finally happened that he got this done. Because last year, the National Right to Life affiliate there, who is actually on the executive committee of National Right to Life, said, oh, we just need to get this rape exception through. We need to get the bill through with the rape exception. And then, you know, we can take care of it later and in a joint committee between the House and Senate. And well, that didn't happen. A lot of legislators followed their advice, and they shut down his filibuster with a cloture vote. And a week later, it didn't get passed at all. And so all of those promises were completely shallow. This year, again, he filibustered, and then it went to a committee. And on the subcommittee, a joint committee, he told them that I will filibuster the committee report if you don't take out this rape exception. But then he said, here's a great guy who really carries the water for us, but he didn't realize. He said, oh, but I have Georgia's language. You know, thinking it came from George Wright's wife, which it didn't. When they passed this in Georgia, their late-term abortion ban, and they added fetal abnormalities, immediately Georgia Wright's wife pulled their support. He didn't know that. And he said, oh, you know, this has fetal abnormality, but it has to be fatal. These are not fatal. My friends here, Brad and Jesse Smith from Save the One, they're some of our national speakers, and Brad's on the board. They'll be speaking at 4 o'clock in the other room, and they can explain this to you further. One of those fetal abnormalities is trisomy 18. Yeah, try to convince that to them because their daughter is 6 years old. 7 now? Oh, awesome. And so it does not have to, this is not a fatal abnormality. And so, and even still, we shouldn't be condoning killing these children while they're in utero. But even good people don't understand these nuances. And so that's what we do with Save the One. We try to educate. We have blog, regularly have articles. So we sort of have two divisions. We have the rape issue that we cover, and then we have the so-called fetal abnormalities. We have a carry to birth group with hundreds now, I think, on Facebook. I have a database on the rape issue. We have 335 in just over 2 years. I just met a new one who came up here with my friends from Personhood, Florida, and she has a story similar to mine. And it was funny because Kitty said, she's the Rebecca Kiesling of Florida. Like, awesome. And we have a huge Florida group. So we have groups all over the country where we have, I think, 20 in Michigan, and we have over a dozen in Florida. So we are connecting everybody, getting their stories written out, and making sure that they're available to testify so that we can start to make a difference because we haven't been utilized the way we should be utilized. And so let me give you some examples. Oh, let me finish on the parable of the lost sheep. So he said, see that you do not despise any of these little ones, for I tell you that their angels in heaven always look upon the face of my Father in heaven. And then he goes into the parable of the lost sheep, which of course I'm sure you all know. And that at the end of it, he ends it saying, for in the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any, that's right. Your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish, that they should die, right? And neither should we, right? That should be understood universally within the pro-life movement. Neither should we. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And it took me years as a pro-life activist. I started speaking in 1995. It took me years to find out what was really going on because I'm from Michigan, where we've never had a rape exception in a single law. My understanding is that we're the only state who never had a rape exception in their law. Georgia now has no rape exceptions on the books because there was a law that got repealed years ago. But Michigan started out, for a long time, they were the only affiliate of National Right to Life who refused to compromise. There used to be New Jersey Right to Life. They got kicked out. They took over their affiliate over this issue. Colorado Right to Life got kicked out over this issue. And now today, there's a whole bunch of state affiliates and some who left over this issue or got kicked out, like Georgia Right to Life got kicked out over this issue. So we've got Georgia Right to Life, No Exceptions, No Compromise, Colorado Right to Life. We've got New Hampshire Right to Life, which is not an affiliate of National Right to Life, but they are an affiliate of Personhood Alliance. And then we've got South Dakota Right to Life, Tennessee Right to Life, Alaska Right to Life. Alaska Right to Life is an affiliate of Personhood Alliance. And then we've got several personhood organizations. So we've got Personhood New York and Personhood Florida and Pro-Life Wisconsin and Personhood Iowa. And who am I leaving out? You guys are here today. We just took a group photo. I don't want to leave anybody out. But so we've got a lot of great affiliates. And Save the One is also an at-large affiliate of Personhood Alliance. Because the beauty of personhood is that with personhood, there are no exceptions. It's not like you're going to say that define a child, you know, under the 14th Amendment as a person from conception, but then all of a sudden you're going to make a rape exception? Because that 14th Amendment says that no state shall deny a person equal protection of the laws. So then how could you possibly, on the one hand, offer personhood, but then be willing to deny equal protection? Because that's what this is. This is an equal protection issue. One of the things I'd like to do is start bringing equal protection claims across the country where they add fatal fetal abnormalities, where they add rape exceptions, and start to challenge those laws. I wanted to do that in Florida because Florida has several rape exceptions on the books. And I contacted Liberty Council, friends of mine. And, you know, I'm not afraid to name names because we're never going to have a change unless people know and there's accountability for people's actions. And I contacted a lawyer somebody recommended. He's a friend of mine. I'm like, yeah, good idea. Contact Liberty Council. I talked to the guy and I said, I have this great idea. You guys just passed a law with a rape exception. This is like last year, 2 years ago. I want to challenge it. I have a bunch of people from Florida with these stories. We would like to bring a lawsuit alleging that this violates equal protection. And he said, oh, that's, you know, it sounds like a really good strategy. Let me get back with you. He gets back with me and he says, gee, you know, I'm really sorry, but we can't do this because we had endorsed that law. Well, then, what does that tell you? You had no business endorsing that in the first place? If you can't represent us that our rights were violated in a court case, then obviously you had no business supporting that. In Michigan, again, we've never had a rape exception because Right to Life in Michigan doesn't give political action committee endorsements to rape exception candidates. They don't endorse legislation that has rape exceptions. And let me give you some pragmatic examples of how this worked. And I was protected in Michigan. For those of you who don't know more of my story, not only was I conceived and raped when my birth mother was abducted at knife point by a serial rapist, but she went to 2 back alley abortions. I was almost aborted. The fact that it was illegal is why she backed out. I owe my birth to the law being there to protect me. Let me make this clear. To legislators, pro-life leaders who refuse to compromise. That's why I'm here. That's why you get to hear me today. Because of those people who are no exceptions, no compromise. And I think the most egotistical thing to do would be like, well, you know, I deserved it. Look what I've done with my life. And millions of others didn't. I can't do that. I feel like my life was spared from a burning building. And as I have the opportunity to go back and save others, I'm going to do it. And I feel a sense of urgency. This is not a game. Real lives are at stake, and it's urgent. So in Michigan, there was the state version of the Hyde Amendment to defund, to have no Medicaid funding of abortion. And they realized they didn't have the votes. And there was a legislator that was about to introduce a rape exception. Right to Life in Michigan pulled their support and said, no, 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 don't do it, don't do it. They said, fine, you know what? Our only option is we're going to, you know, go after them in their primaries to get them out and replace them with 100% pro-life legislators. And we're going to do a statewide petition drive. And they did. They did a statewide petition drive, spent tons of money on this, and it was polling well, looked like they were going to win, and in the last 2 months, Planned Parenthood ran 2 ads on the rape issue, you know, trying to play this all, because of course they always go after the rape issue, right? Right to Life of Michigan was told by their pollsters that if you don't run an ad in response, you're going to lose over this issue. And so in the last 2 weeks of the campaign, they borrowed money they didn't have, and they ran ads directly on point. And they won! Okay. Sadly, what happened in North Dakota when they did an abortion ban, I think it's been like 8 years now, 8 years ago, they did an abortion ban, and I was there to speak, and I brought other people who were conceived in rape with similar stories or conceived in incest. We spoke at their state convention for South Dakota Right to Life, who's no exceptions. The Vote Yes for Life campaign, run by Leslie Unruh from like an abstinence group, she was going to run an ad with two of us. Me, conceived in rape, and a guy from South Dakota who nobody knew his story, but he was a well-known figure, a philanthropist. He had owned Prairie Coach, you know, luxury bus lines, and he also founded Angel Bus because his son died from, I think, brain cancer. And Angel Bus provides luxury bus rides across the country for children who are getting treated for cancer. And so he was very well known, very respected, but people didn't know that he was conceived in rape. So he was going to, you know, come out of the closet with this story, and we were going to do an ad. Well, they sent us the copy, and it didn't even have us saying anything about being conceived in rape. It just said, you know, life begins at conception, and they were going to put across the screen that we were conceived in rape. Then they decided to just scrap the ad and not do it at all because their ad agency said, you know what, we've decided to keep this as an upbeat, positive message that life begins at conception. Well, let me tell you, we have a 5-state study shows that, you know, people know that. I mean, that's science. And over 90% of people believe that abortion's wrong, that it's immoral. You don't need to convince them that. They know life begins at conception. They know it's wrong, that it's immoral. And then you only have, depending on the state, 50 to 60% call themselves pro-life. It was actually higher in South Dakota. It was over 70% of the people called themselves pro-life. But then you have a whole bunch of people who make this rape exception. These are people who are 99% of the way there. They're with you. All you have to do is convince them the 1%, and you win. And so smart politics is to appeal to the middle. And who are the middle with this issue? The middle are those people who are pro-life who make the rape exception. Target them. Go after them. The other side's doing it. In South Dakota, their yard signs were black with yellow letters with the word rape and a coat hanger. That was their whole message. Rape, coat hanger. And what the Vote Yes for Life campaign did was, la, 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 I can't hear you. We don't see that. Like, hear no evil, see no evil. Like, we're just going to ignore that that's over there. And you know what? They lost. And their law was repealed when it was on the ballot. Because unlike Michigan, Right to Life of Michigan, where they said, we need to go out. We can't ignore this. We're going to spend the money and we are going, we're going to hit this head on. We are not ignoring this. They ignored it, and they lost. And then the national dialogue amongst national pro-life leaders was, see, if you can't win in South Dakota, you have to have a rape exception. It was the worst lesson learned, but they don't know what happened behind the scenes. They don't know that it lost because of the failure to act, to do something on this issue. Now, Right to Life of Michigan, you saw that beautiful video for Save the One. That was a gift from Right to Life of Michigan. They ran 4 ads, and you had footage from a couple of the ads addressing this issue this past year. They spent a ton of money because after doing that 5-state study, they looked at Michigan, they said, we can do better on the rape exception. We can do much better. We're going to run statewide ads on this issue and fundraise on this because they care. They want to change the hearts of people. And then the other thing is that when you only endorse candidates who are 100% pro-life, these are the people who are passionate about this issue. As long as you protect politicians instead of protecting innocent babies, you will not get anywhere. We're successful in Michigan. We have some of the best laws in the nation, and we are not a red state. We're like a purple state. But Right to Life of Michigan has some of the best pro-life laws in the nation. They are the number one most powerful single issue PAC in the state because people respect that endorsement because they know that it means something. This isn't just a wasted vote rubber stamp. There's a lot of people who stop voting pro-life because they figure, well, why bother? We vote pro-life and they don't do anything for us. Well, that's because they're all rape exception guys. You know, get in the people who are good and you can start to make a difference, start to change things. And that's the litmus test. If they have a rape exception, you know they're not your candidate. They're not passionate about this issue. And studies show that the people who want to end abortion, who believe that it should be illegal, that it should actually be criminal, are the ones who make no exceptions. But there's a huge segment of people who call themselves pro-life who don't think it should be criminal. Like, well, let's not get crazy. You know, I don't like abortion. I prefer childbirth. I'm willing to support pregnancy resource centers, but, you know, what, criminal? Really? Let's not get crazy. Well, when you can convince people the humanity of all children, those are the people who are now going to get it, that this is about equal protection, this is about human rights. So some other examples. Does this mean I'm 14 minutes in or 14 minutes left? Left? Okay. I'm going to leave some time for Q&A, but let me give some quick examples of how we made a difference. In Michigan, we overrode a governor's veto on the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. The governor vetoed it. I asked a whole bunch of pro-life leaders at a conference of pro-life leaders, you know, what would you do? Would you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars that you don't have to do a statewide petition drive to overturn the governor's veto? Would you wait till we have another governor? Or would you just introduce it with a rape exception right now? And they were like, most of them were like, oh, you introduce it with a rape exception right now. Well, not in Michigan. They did a statewide petition drive. And we overrode the governor's veto. And instead of having, it went to this, to the legislature by a majority vote, it became law. Instead of having, you know, these Republicans say something awkward, potentially, they brought in 10 of us from Save the One. We did a press conference, and it was, they told the Republicans, don't debate this issue. You know, you debated it last year, just, we have people here, they got your back, let them speak. So the next day, the reports, instead of being about these, you know, radical extremist Republicans, it was like this really interesting group of people showed up in Lansing, and it was our photo of the ton of us that was on the cover, that was in the New York Times, and that ended up getting picked up all over the country. Huffington Post posted our photo. And one of the first questions they asked is, how do you all know each other? Like, well, you know, I wish I would have started my database 20 years ago because there'd probably be a couple thousand by now. But we, you know, we have a good network of people. And there's strength in numbers. We also overrode the governor's veto in Missouri, again, a purple state. And this was a three-day waiting period. There were only two other states that had a three-day waiting period to get an abortion. And when they didn't have the votes, when the governor vetoed it, he pointed out the rape exception, but he's also pro-choice anyway. Pro-life leaders from a bunch of groups in the state went to the senator who sponsored the bill and said, okay, let's get the rape exception, you know, let's get it introduced with the rape exception. That senator said, no, I'm not going to forsake the child conceived in rape. And all these pro-life leaders said, but we don't have the votes. He said, I'll get the votes. And he had his staffer call me. So we got a bunch of people together. We have a bunch of people who live in Missouri, started lobbying. We had five of us at the state capitol in the rotunda. We did a huge rally, shared our stories. It was a little boy who was conceived in rape. It was his fourth birthday, Noah. They all sang him happy birthday. So then when they were debating it, and we were up in the gallery, they kept pointing to us up in the gallery, and all these legislators were crying, talking about how emotional it was for them, singing happy birthday to this little boy, and what it really means to be able to tell somebody happy birthday. And it was a game changer. They overrode the governor's veto. And they need a two-thirds supermajority. Not just a majority. And then, you know, same thing in West Virginia. It was a late-term abortion paying, you know, late-term abortion paying capable type bill. A ban, and they didn't have the votes. The governor vetoed it. Two-thirds supermajority required, and they did it. Because we had someone there in West Virginia. And so we can make a huge difference. And I could go on and on with a bunch of examples, but my time's just about up. Some of you know the story of Governor Rick Perry, how God used me to change his heart during his presidential campaign, and Newt Gingrich. Both of them came out, signed a personhood pledge the next morning after our conversation. Governor Perry went on national news talking about how my story pierced his heart, saying he could not look in the eyes and justify the rape exception any longer. So if you can change the heart of a governor during a presidential campaign, you can change the heart of anyone. We need to try. What a concept, right? It's revolutionary. I know. I understand. Let's try. Let's do something different. There's no need to compromise. Ohio can be like Michigan. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you. You guys are a great audience. I'll tell you, all day, you've just been so responsive and so helpful. That is awesome. Hopefully a few more questions are coming up here, or you could tell another five stories, because that...
There is one story.
Oh, go ahead.
I have to tell one more. There was an example, actually, in Ohio where we did make a difference, and this is last year, right after the conference. I met Nino. Do you guys know Nino Vitale? No? Stand up, just real quick. He's a state rep here. Okay. And it was crazy because we started talking and he said that he had a heartbeat bill up that week. And, you know, he was getting beat up as being like a radical extremist, you know, and because he actually believes in protecting all. And so we quickly made arrangements. And how many of us were there? Like five, six, seven? You know, we had Naomi Coy and her husband. They had a child with trisomy 18. We had me, Mary Rathke, who's in that video. We had a gal who was conceived in statutory rape, who was her birth mother. Her mom was 14 at the time, and we had a gal there with her daughter, who's from Ohio, who's conceived in rape, who's a mother from rape with her daughter who's conceived in rape. So all of us were there to testify on the bill, and it did change the dialogue, didn't it? I mean, there were legislators who were crying when we were testifying. And so we need to do more of that. But it was crazy because, you know what? It wasn't Ohio Right to Life who invited me. Not that I haven't offered in the past. It should have been them inviting me there. Instead, it was him, and he hosted an open house, invited every legislator in the state to come meet us. How cool is that? It was pretty cool.
I just had some family gathering around, and one of my cousins I haven't seen in 20 years just asked who I was supporting in the presidential election and why. And I said, well, really, I'm strictly a pro-life voter. And she said, without a blink of the eye, of course, in the exception of rape and incest. Like, it was just automatic that any reasonable, intelligent person would have that position. So besides your personal story, what are some of the reasons? Because it's so terrible. These poor girls have been raped. They've been through this terrible trauma. Why would you make a woman carry a child and carry that reminder of this horrible thing? And this is, she's just pouring out her heart. How would you answer her?
Well, our five-state study proved really what I've always known and what worked with Governor Perry is that, look, I did not deserve the death penalty for the crimes of my biological father. And so all you have to do is say to people, well, look, I believe in punishing rapists, not babies, and I don't believe that child deserved the death penalty because of some guy's crime. You know, and you can ask people, do you believe in the death penalty for rapists? We'll see what their answer is. The U.S. Supreme Court said it's cruel and unusual punishment, even for child molesters. in two cases. So he doesn't deserve the death penalty. Oh, but you're going to give it to an innocent child? And this wasn't the best argument, but as far as in our five-state study, but the truth is that she's four times more likely to die within the next year after the abortion. They have a higher murder rate because it helps perpetuate abusive relationships. It protects and enables perpetrators of incest, sex traffickers. Could not do what they do without abortion clinics. They rely on the abortion clinics to get these girls abortion. So you're destroying the evidence and you're protecting enabling rapists, and she's worse off. So if you really care about a rape victim, you should want to protect her from the rapist and from the abortion and not the baby.
Good stuff. Good. Well, one of the questions here takes the second half of that about what's even worse than a rape would be rape by a family member. Any other twist you would add on that for incest?
You know, the younger a girl is who's been raped, the more likely it is that it is a family member. And again, the abortion is going to protect the family member. This girl might have been raped for 5 years. And guess who is protecting her now? Who is it that has revealed the rape? It's her child. Her child is delivering her out of the rape. And the younger she is, again, the more likely she's pretty far along. And so now you're talking about a late-term abortion that studies show is far more dangerous for her than giving birth, far more. And they may say, oh, if she was forced to carry full term, it would be dangerous for her health. That's true. That's true. Oh, but what they failed to disclose is that that's never the standard of care, that when you've got a young mother, petite mother, you deliver early, when the baby still will survive. But you treat them both. You don't rip the baby apart limb by limb. And people think somehow you're going to spare her of having to go through labor. Well, in one of the cases I had that was national news, one of my pro bono cases, they sent her to Tilly the Killer. It was a 3-day procedure. They had to put laminaries inside to dilate her cervix. She had to go through labor. They stopped the baby's heart first with, like, electrodes. And she had to deliver a baby, but she delivered a dead baby because this child was conceived in rape. She was 12. Her brother was 14. Her brother had raped her. You didn't spare her labor. So
it just seems the majority of people who just keep hearing that clause really do have a heart where they think that they're helping, but they don't know the complications of emotional, physical, and trauma of either the rape nor the aftermath of abortion. So that is a good answer. Thank you. How about in terms of strategy, since that was your main theme, how effective ads, what would it take to get this word out? Where do you see the main battles? Is it legislative? Is it convincing the multitudes? Could you take your strategy a step further? In light of getting this word out, that we don't want a rape and incest clause, that it's not a good law, how do we best fight it? We're sharing your story. You're talking a lot about politicians. Is there other ways? Would TV ads, internet, social media, just talking about what would it take besides the battle just in the legislative or the political realm?
I mean, as far as social media, there's just like a boatload of stories now. We have so many stories on our blog. We have tons of memes that are very, very powerful. You can see which ones went viral. One of our most viral stories was Jennifer Christie's story, raped while on a business trip. I mean, that had almost 1 million shares to Facebook. It got picked up by other publications, you know, not just Life News, LifeSite News, and Live Action News, but also all kinds of Christian secular publications. I mean, it really went viral. So there's a lot of really, really good stories and memes and videos. We have long videos, short videos. So there's plenty. Our Facebook page is Save the One, and that's the number one, not the word one. And then with legislation, I'm tired of celebrating mediocrity. We really have to rethink protecting politicians by just throwing a bone here and there. I don't know if you saw the video that's been going around this past week, because there's an abortion ban in Oklahoma. Senator Silk, it makes abortion murder for anybody who performs it. And there's a video of somebody talking to the vice president of National Right to Life, and they're sort of discussing this issue, and it's like amazing to see what this guy says. And so you start to realize, wow, you know, they're not really all that concerned. You know, they think that the answer is the presidency. Well, okay, Republicans keep giving us pro-choice politicians who won't overturn Roe v. Wade. Some will tell you that we're at a 5-4 vote, or we're at a 4 well, and of course Scalia passed away now, but that we were at a 4-4 vote with one swing vote in Kennedy. But really, we were still at a 7-2 vote. Now that he passed away, we're at a 7-1 vote. Because if you read the case of Gonzalez v. Carhart, which they always point out as being a huge victory, that's the partial birth abortion ban that Congress passed and the Supreme Court upheld. If you actually read the case, first of all, it is the grisliest opinion in the history of the court. The court goes into graphic details all the different ways you can kill a baby who is in the process of being born. And partial birth abortion is just one of many ways. And the court says that doctors, that they're upholding this because doctors can know whether within their rights or not with certainty, because there's clear anatomical landmarks. Because it talks about, depending on which way the baby's born, whether the nape of the neck is showing or whether the navel is showing. And first of all, anybody in the medical field is like, what navel? There's no navel. There's an umbilicus. Okay, there's no navel yet. And, you know, geniuses, right? And then, of course, you know how offensive navels are, right? I mean, pro-life people can't sleep at night if they know that the navel's showing, right? I mean, it's sad that this really has satiated the masses. I have spoken at so many banquets or attended banquets where they're celebrating, oh, we got partial birth abortion passed. Oh, never. And people have said to me, well, don't you realize it's a huge fundraiser? Well, there you go. All right, great. I guess it is, but you're satiating the masses. That, like, we have some kind of victory because the navel's not showing? Really? Oh, gosh. And then the court also said in that case that for any doctors who still feel that it's beneficial to, you know, suck the baby's brains out and collapse the baby's head before having to deliver, and really it's more the shoulders that are, you know, harder to deliver than the head, but at any rate, they said that it seems to us that you can, that they're, like, the solution would be you provide a lethal injection first. Have we saved any babies? Have we stopped partial birth abortion if they're doing a lethal injection first? Do you feel better? Do you feel like, wow, what a victory? Pro-life movement tells us that's a victory. And then if you look at the concurring opinion that was signed by Scalia and Thomas, they said, while we agree with the outcome upholding the ban on partial birth abortion, we don't agree with the reasoning of the majority because we don't believe there's a right to an abortion under the Constitution. And we don't believe in reaffirming Roe versus Wade and Casey. So understand, Alito and Roberts are not our guys. That is a 7-2 vote right there. Do you understand that? You have three justices who just upheld Roe versus Wade. And I believe that the Gonzalez court was far more extreme than the Roe court, because in Roe versus Wade, we weren't talking about babies who were in the middle of being born. So don't buy into that, oh, we're doing so, but let's just wait till, you know, a president does the right thing. You know, we just have to get the right presidential candidate. No, and I can't believe how people debate with me because, you know, I'm no exceptions, no compromise, and so therefore, hashtag never Trump. Okay? Never! And And I've actually, I've been hammering away at this the last few weeks because we're not waiting until October. We're telling you now, I will never, ever vote for Donald Trump. And here's a guy who said that his sister, who is a sitting federal court of appeals judge, who overturned a partial birth abortion ban, he said that he thinks she would make a terrific Supreme Court justice. And you want me to vote for him? Because, Rebecca, you have to think about the Supreme Court now that Scalia passed away. I'm going to trust that guy? I mean, we couldn't even trust Bush, either Bush. We couldn't trust. Reagan messed this up. And I'm supposed to just rely on a Republican president doing the right thing? Democrats never screw this up. So, no, I'm not going to compromise my values.
Wow. Well, we're down to the last 2 minutes here, and no special announcements other than we have great speakers coming up at 3 o'clock. We'll have a 30-minute break. But so with the last 2 minutes, you will be here for the rest of the day. You have a booth.
I'll be here tomorrow.
And all day tomorrow. So what's next on your schedule, and anything else you want to share in the last minute?
Our Spanish division has taken off. We just launched like in May. Salvar el Uno. It represents, you know, the 1%, right? We have translators and editors on our page, admins from Spain and from Latin America, and we have like 9,000 followers on our Spanish page. My Twitter is blowing up today from a tweet from 3 weeks ago that said in Spanish, I did not deserve the death penalty for the crimes of my biological father. Because in Chile and in countries all over Latin America, they're trying to legalize abortion for rape. So if you guys speak Spanish and you want to like retweet any of that or share any of our stuff on our Salvar el Uno page, you know, we really, that's where the battle is right now. Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland, and then, of course, in Africa and in Latin America.
You've been listening to Rebecca Kiesling, founder and president of Save the One, and a 2016 Bringing America Back to Life Convention speaker.